Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Friday, everybody. We have made it to the end of another work week, thanking God for another day of being here. And thanking all of you for the wonderful conversations that we have been having in the last two parts of the segment. Tonight will be part three. So let's get our shout-outs out the way. We have a couple of new people that we want to add on into the mix. First of all, let me say thank you to Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio, currently with isoradio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is gracing New York with the best of live R&B events all over the best of venues as the CEO of Track One Entertainment. To keep up with Barry and his latest events, head over to Facebook or to track1entertain.web.com to see what he's doing next. To my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, DJ Dilmerk, Alotney Williams, Monster Miles, and of course, last but not least, that awesome panelist and activist out in Toledo, Ohio, Seek and Betty Williams, for their awesome input. To my starting panelists, Patrick Irvine, Salo Jenkins, Al-Tariq Atkins, Professor Carlton Jones, Darlene, and Arlene, thank you guys very much for all that you do. Now, to my social media, Mr. Mark Pittman, tonight's sponsor, and his two groups, the Real World Blackness and Discussions Group, the Black History Suppressed Group, Linda Miller, and the Black Love and Conversations Group, Patrick Irvine with the Urban Intellectuals Open Discussion Group, Professor Carlton Jones with the What About Us Group, thinking Sunny Gibson and the Black Mamba Group. I want to thank, of course, Katie Barnett and the On the Edge Listeners Lounge. You are one awesome group of people out there constantly promoting awareness with me on these by bringing me what's going on in your communities and your feedback on the topics that we post. I want to add and announce that we have two sister stations that syndicate shows that you may have missed or shows that are new coming up, and that is A with Mr. Devon Lewis, you guys in Toledo, Ohio, known as the Dev OWN over in 93.1 Jam Pack Radio in Toledo, Ohio. We are syndicated with him every Sunday from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. And then again, we have Mr. Jason Dowd of the AMFM247.com website, which also features five terrestrial stations in a few states, which I will announce sometime before the show is out. And you can hear us on that station on Wednesdays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. So I want to thank both of those gentlemen for helping us spread the word, and soon you'll be listening out for our syndication on iHeartRadio. Thanking all of you for joining us last night and the night before, we have been discussing a topic entitled Fighting the Power to Restore Your Power. Today is part three, and it's called Accountability. We are going to be speaking on all of the things that has been happening specifically to the African-American community. As you all know, that's what the show really focuses on. However, our topics are universally a society problem. But tonight we're going to be speaking, my peoples, about where should we actually place accountability? And then on top of that, whichever place it will go, what it is that we need to be looking into to start developing ourselves, whether or not most of what's being said tonight has been said before. Let's start looking at it. Tonight the blinders come off, the filters are down. Tonight we speak as it is. And as much as this show has been a cutting-edge talk, I will say that the progress has to keep happening. We have to keep alluding to more and more and more until something truly starts to happen and we have a break in the same old cycle. So you know how this goes, everybody. I'm going to go over to our pre-discussion song, our word from our sponsors. When we get back, this party will be on the table. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Keep it locked with Katie.
Thank you. New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett, and now it is time to get started with this discussion. We have been running this series for 3 segments as of today now, and it is called Finding the Power to Restore Your Power. We are speaking on us as a whole society, and in particular, additionally, those of us in the African-American society, dealing with fears and oppression and attacks and all sorts of things. Now, the first day we spoke on the fears that we have as a society, and twice as much, these fears are doubled because of the unique manner in which African Americans either have to receive it or are dealt it, such as fear of the police, fear of judges, fear of politicians, of teachers, fear of landlords, fear of employers-to-be. These are things that we all deal with, and we were speaking on how it is the first day that we fight back. How do we deal with all the constant brutality coming from the police? Well, definitely no, we can stand up for ourselves, even though that might come more than likely with some illegal retaliation. But at the same token, as much as we expect it, do we still sit there and be debilitated by our fears of it? There are things that we can do. It can't go on forever. As much as it's running rampant right now, there's still ways we do it. When do we get tired? That is the question. We spoke about in day one of how we allow teachers to have us hanging our heads as parents, allowing our children to be given, you know, crappy curriculum or being unfairly held to standards that don't belong to their particular age bracket. Things to that effect. We spoke about how judges and employers that we accept a lot of illegally posed questions or questions that are illegal but under the mask of being a very appropriate or necessary question in order to interview for candidacy to become a worker for this company. We spoke about how we're afraid of landlords, and this mainly comes from us as African Americans. We are the ones that get it the worst. As much as people try to close their eyes and hush about it and don't say the race word and let's do this, enough already. Today the blinders, the filters, all of this comes up because that's what we're going to be talking about. Yesterday we spoke about Justin Bieber and his racist videos. And what we addressed was, forget what he's done. He comes from a place where this is what we expect them to do. You can't fault the dog for barking, so you can't fault a young white boy for doing what is naturally accepted in his culture. Not saying that all people in, of that race is the same. Like I say on the show all the time, those of you who are brave enough to listen in, if the shoes don't fit you, don't put them on. If we are attacking the bad, negative aspect of a specific topic and you happen to be part of the group that's being targeted in the discussion, but you are not of that behavior, then this doesn't apply to you and you should be listening in to either encourage, support, or join in with the fight to end the nonsense. And nonsense is putting it mildly, because the nonsense, per se, to a black American is death, loss of their child, loss of their freedom, loss of their lives. So it's not particularly nonsense as much as it is really some fatal blows. So we spoke on Justin Bieber last night. We spoke on not what he should do, but what was it we could do? What will we do about it? What can we do about it? And I'll say this, Usher and Will Smith, I'll give them one small pass on them attempting to try to teach a young child who probably was unaware of his ignorance at the time to try to educate him, since they are his mentors and his producers, on just how unfunny his particular choice of jokes were, because the people he was talking about suffered a great deal with those very names being called from a much more serious group of people around them. Now, first of all, as much as I'll give them that small pass, and mind you, it's a very minute pass, my bigger question is, what would make a 14-year-old child think that that particular subject was something to use as a joke in the first place? And with that being said, why wasn't that the mindset as well of the two black celebrities who were involved with helping this boy mature into a black music world as a non-black person? Why wasn't that their mentality, even in their attempts to try to make a difference in this young boy? Okay, now the pass ended for Justin, when after he set out an apology, which clearly was a little too intelligently worded for it to have come from him directly, so we all know that he must have had a well-paid publicist with a well-crafted writing skill to put that together and word it and angle it and advertise it just the way it needed to be said. So, fine. We excused it through all of our disgust with it, but okay. So if you were sorry about it and you truly felt that way, then what prompted you when you were now a year older and wiser, plus now had the added bonus of being taught something and shown historical videos of the very people you were talking about, to create yet another video that, even though it came out 5 years after it was done, clearly you haven't changed your mindset on it whatsoever? And just one second, ladies and gentlemen, there's a little bit of a wiring issue. Give me 2 seconds. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for the brief pause. So we are discussing this. So we are talking about a year later, this boy, after the apology and after all the mentoring and after all the teaching, still went ahead and did not just another racist video, but one that was even more intensely disgusting, because now he was deliberately speaking on the nigger word, because I'm not going to say the ... word. That's not the way he said it. One less lonely nigger, one less lonely nigger. It's okay. If I kill one of them, I'll be part of the KKK. Really sounds like he was remorseful and well-educated now. Not to mention that right after this came up, now they have a whole big photo gallery entitled Justin Bieber with His Black Friends. That really made a difference. So with all that being said on yesterday's situation, my angle was not about him. With all that you just heard, as disgusting and as mountable as all of these things are, with all of that being said, I still don't have any surprise or blame on the kid. My question angles with us. We're the targets. We're the victims. We're the ones going through all of this. But yet somehow, some way, these guys still tend to get higher up, in deeper and higher in this garbage against us with our funds, with our support. Be it blatantly giving them support, be it indirectly giving them support, be it I don't care about it, one way or the other, with indifference. Because you're too afraid to do what? Face the what? The elephant in the room. The big old racism, they don't like us. They don't want us here. At least they don't want us here in the capacity of being equal to walk like humans and talk like humans, eat, drink, and need like humans, work like humans, think and act and have strategy like humans. We need to be around so that we could be their workhorses, their fallbacks, their, the butt of their bar jokes, their target practice. Their need to feel good when their lives are going down. So let's go shoot a nigger and have a little fun. Those of you that are not of the African-American persuasion who are listening and gasping, don't gasp. Get up and do something. Because believe it or not, you are in the position to make a change from your backyard. Tonight, my people, we are going to be right in the middle of the hot seat. We're not going to be able to say we didn't know. We're not going to be able to say it is what it is. Not here tonight on this panel. No, we will not. We are going to speak to solutions, and we're going to really start to see what tiny little things that you think is tiny and will not make a difference can actually do just that. Something that's within your choice that no matter what amount of killing, shooting, no matter what amount of slander, no matter what amount of trash media they put out about us, these are the few things they cannot take from you. By law, not by undercover law, nothing. So that's one. We are really going to get into the nitty-gritty of self-reflection of what it is we need to look at about ourselves and stop being able to peg that on the hook of another person. Because what it is we've been going through for centuries on end is something that we expect from the people who are committing it. And I'm going to say this again. If you don't understand by now that should you walk by as an average person to pass a zoo cage with a wildebeest or a tiger, whose natural instinct is to rule the jungle. Not running, because that's the king of the jungle is the lion, just for those of you who think, I don't know, my animal species. But they run amok. People fear them. They run from them. All they want to do is catch you, maul you, eat you, and keep it moving. So if we don't get that, walking in the middle of a wild habitat, to understand that the residents of that wild habitat is going to be wild, is going to be destructive, is going to do what they naturally are born and created to do, then we are never going to be able to walk as a complete people ever. If you don't expect to walk by a tiger's cage, past the barriers, past the protection glass, past whatever at a zoo, and you want to stick your hand inside of a tiger's cage and don't expect to draw back a nub, something is truly wrong with the way your blinders are working. So let's get them off, shall we? Let me get started. I see there's a panelist already trying to come in, so I'll be right with you, panelists. Let's start about some of the things that I want to bring up. We already know how bad things are out there. I'm going to bring up a couple of more points just in case all the other disgusting, horrendous things that you have seen haven't gotten you yet. We have spoken on the fact that our people have not the luxury of being able to go out there and be in a scandal as a celebrity or a high-top figure because the punishment for those crimes never end. Never are lenient or forgiving or understandable or compassionate as it would be with a white counterpart who not only committed the offense but had some mitigating factors that were a little bit further in intensity and cruelty than what you've done as an African American. Case in point, a mother that left her child, two children in a car for 45 minutes to go have an interview because she had no child care, get jail and her children removed, while a white mother who opted and chose on a daily basis to drink, drug, and then drive a car with her infant son in a seat forgets the fact that she put him on top of the hood of a car, which is already a stupid thing to do, drives off 12 miles and her baby winds up being dropped into the dead center traffic of a very busy highway that thankfully nothing happened to the infant. She gets probation because everybody could understand that those white teens drink, right? Janet Jackson has a wardrobe malfunction at a Super Bowl, and it's the talk of the century. It's an abomination. It's a need for apology if you ever want to be accepted in the Grammys again at 40 years old. However, Miley Cyrus at 19 was taking foam fingers and, you know, wearing bikinis and doing whatever on stage and walking around talking about, it's my party and I'm going to do what I want to and nobody can stop me. It's my thing. Rub up herself and do whatever. At 19 years old, she's a child in trouble trying to find herself. She gets a talk show. She gets a book deal. She gets a following. She gets a higher, better-based career. Let me bring up a couple of new factors. Ready? The Hunger Games director's son, Elliot Rodger, goes on a drive-by rampage after posting a video of, oh, my God, his also underprivileged wife. He's rich. His dad is the director of the biggest, I don't know, cult series now going around. And yet and still, everything is so messed up because girls just don't like him. Not the fact that maybe it's just not his time for those particular girls. Maybe he should be taught to love himself enough to respect himself and other people, and maybe the right girl will come along. But because people don't like him, he decides he's entitled to go take a gun, go outside and shoot anybody who might have not looked at him the right way or rejected in advance, then cowardly shoot himself. And it's a tragedy. Nobody speaks that much ill of this boy after just pointing at the fact that he posted this video. Dead, it's over. Let the man grieve. Let the boy's soul rest in peace. And it's not even looked upon as disgusting or it was horrendous. It was a criminal thing. What was in the mind of this kid? Nothing. Maybe one follow-up article about what we can learn from him. So once again, even in an infamous way, he's being celebrated in a sense of a hero because now he's going to be the example of what it is we could learn from the tragedy that took place from this spoiled brat's anger with the world for not people not loving him as a perfect, good-looking guy. His words. But now, let's go over to something that would be considered shocking of us because what's celebrated on the front page about us is never anything good. Chance the Rapper, a Chicago rapper, okay, was in the Chicago news for literally assisting in a very big way and halting, stopping, ending for 42 hours the gun violence that's been rampant and known in Chicago. He personally took to his Twitter account and repeatedly for a week straight, on the request of his father, offered his celebrityhood out there for a mission of peace, for a mission of repair. And guess what? Tell me how many widespread front page mentions of this going on for weeks on end have you seen? Why would they want to celebrate a black rapper of all things doing something positive, constructive, progressive, and actually healing to this nation, even if it was for 42 damn hours? Because they wouldn't. But now, who does the accountability of that not happening fall on? Do we expect white media to celebrate us when they're doing everything they can to smear us, to feminize us, get rid of us, degrade us, defame us, discredit us? I don't expect the white media to do that. But I do expect that our people will get the hell up and say, why wasn't this brought up in the media this long? Why didn't you run this story for 7 days? That's where we're accountable, ladies and gentlemen, us. You can't take a tiger and make him a house pet and then get mad with the tiger for chewing up everything in your house, including you or one of your family members. You should ask yourself why anybody would be stupid enough to think that that was something to do in the first place. You should ask yourself, why is it that nobody is out there celebrating the fact that there's been quite a few young geniuses, young prodigies that are out there in the black American society that can play an instrument to a very famous song from start to finish, knowing how to read music and everything, not just playing by ear, which to me is still a fantastic talent that we have as African Americans. But for somebody to be able to take that natural talent and read it professionally and play it all the way through. How we're celebrating that there's been a young kid that's about to go to college and he hasn't even made high school age yet. How is it that none of that is being celebrated? And worse off, shame on us, because why aren't we celebrating it despite the fact that they aren't? Why is it that a kid that can do that in our community gets 100 likes, but Beyonce and Solange's fight, or I should say Jay-Z with Beyonce as a witness in Solange's fight, in a muted audio video surveillance tape of an elevator fight, gets 1,000 likes in an hour? Why is everybody wondering what color Kim Kardashian was going to wear to her wedding to crazy-ass Kanye West? Going to bring up a couple of other things, ladies and gentlemen. As much as you all know, I despise reality shows, especially one that depicts us. Tonight, there's going to be a couple of shows that I actually need. Well, actually, there's going to be one show with multiple examples in that one show that I want to bring up about the different aspects of how we ourselves are destroying ourselves and allowing the outside world to capitalize on our shame. Our self-inflicted and self-approved shame, our self-inflicted and accepted shame. And here we go. Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. Never liked the show. Don't be bothered with it. For some reason, my neighbor had this on this little, I don't know, screen thing she was doing with a party in her backyard. And you have nothing to do but to watch this thing, the loud stereo sound. Let's start off with this. We have Mimi and Stevie Stupid J. Got a daughter. This man has embarrassed his baby's mother in front of his daughter. He has brought his side chick into the house and then made her the queen of the house over his baby's mother in the house. And she's busy trying to act like she's got her stuff together. Meanwhile, you could clearly see she's trying to keep tabs on this man, A, because she's pissed off he didn't choose her. B, because you know what? She's got that little catty jealousy that we women hold on to. Using her daughter as an excuse for the reason why she would dare put herself in the most ridiculous positions with a man who clearly wants her because he can have her and he can hold on to her and use the baby back. She's so busy worrying about what his marriage is fake or doing whatever. Meanwhile, the guy she's with, while I believe he loves her, definitely is using her for a money opportunity while pretending he has nothing to do with it. He has very charismatically just turned this woman into a porn star, whether she believes it or not, by supposedly losing the luggage that had a personal sex tape of them in. Now, he's maneuvering her, and she doesn't even know it, into capitalizing on scandal that her daughter, not his daughter, but her daughter, is going to have to face somewhere down the line. Let's go look at the next couple, where we have Little Scrappy with his meddling mother talking about she's queen of a palace and this is her prince and off with their heads and all this other stuff. Meddling in her son's grown son's life, causing him to have relationships break up or be confused about wanting to commit to a relationship. Meanwhile, you can clearly see he has his own morals and he is telling his mother off in a lot of ways, but it ain't enough. Meanwhile, she's pretty much dictating him and where his women go and who's what. She's in everything. The girls are telling her why she's all in the business. She's acting like she's got it all because she doesn't have a life for herself. Another problem we women do quite often. And I think now one of my biggest pet peeves was the next couple, while that couple I actually respect and admire. There's a situation going on that's a very serious situation, and one of the biggest things that causes us as a black community to lose one of the biggest glues and structure to our whole entire foundation, and that's the family values and the family structure. And here's the situation. Rashida and Kirk. Rashida's mother is way too damn involved. She's a disrespectful little woman, and Rashida's allowing it to happen. And I will say this. I understand that Kirk hasn't been doing certain things too well. Now, I'm not talking about these characters as if I'm well endowed with these people, because, frankly, I don't really care for the show or anything about it. But the actual situation that is going on in there is actually very real, alive, and one of our biggest problems. Ladies and gentlemen, when you get married, your parents stay the hell out of your business. Whether or not you are loyal to your parents, which is understandable, you will always honor your parents. Your parents are supposed to understand that at a certain age, their job of raising you is over, that they have to allow you to cut the umbilical cord and take unto you your spouse. And that is where their first priority goes. It's even in the Bible. We have a job to raise our children so that we can make them good adults to go out there and do it for themselves. Now, Kirk disagrees with his mother-in-law kissing their newborn baby in the mouth, and frankly, I say the same. But Rashida disagrees because she doesn't believe anything, but her mother loves the grandson, and if there's nothing, no harm in it, and blah, blah, blah. Even if that's what you thought, Missy, your husband's input about his child with you is always supposed to supersede it. All right, baby, listen, I don't understand it, but you know what, Mom? I have to respect my husband's wishes because that is his son. Please don't do it. And then she's allowing her mother to embarrass this man at a public photo family shoot and going after him. How do we emasculate our men, ladies? How do we make them feel really bad? How do we go out there and make them feel like what the hell is the reason for being a good person if the person you're trying to be good for is putting you down? Let your mother tell you what to do about your damn marriage. And fellas, don't go hopping up and down because you've done the same thing with your wives being mama's boys. Parents, stay the hell out of your grown kids' marriages. Now, I'm not saying stand back if you know they're getting physically hurt or if you know that he's emulating your daughter or your son in a bad light. I'm saying allow your child the right to have you as a safety net and words of wisdom that are welcome because he or she asked you for it. And then stand back and allow them to be trusted that what you taught them and what you've just told them, they have the damn brains to go out there and do it. You can still voice your opinion of loving them and saying, I don't agree with it this way, but I love you and I have your back and I've got to respect what you say. And do know, I'll be there no matter which way the cookies fall. But if we don't start rising up and start to learn how to pass to the next generation and restructure ourselves, we are never going to be a united front for the troops with the guided missile headed straight for us. We are responsible. No more garbage about, well, it is what it is. Well, they've been doing this to us for years. They did it to your ancestors a whole lot worse, and guess what? Your ancestors still fought for your asses. They're the ones that fought for you to have the rights that you have now to throw away the way we are. So don't tell me it can't be done with all the fears that we're having right now. Do you think that all these police brutality killings didn't happen in a more legal way back then? There was nobody to complain to, no review board to go to, no disciplinary action to take place. Whether or not those people are just doing it for fronting as well, at least it's in place. We have to get it together. We have to stop pretending we don't see that very ugly reflection looking back at us, that ugly reflection of accountability that we have yet to meet. We have to clean out our own closets and backyards before we can start still talking about the leaves in somebody else's. We have to stop fighting each other so that we can start looking as a team about what we need to fight out there. I'm going to go to our first panelist for the evening. Just give me a second as I bring them in. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, KD. This is Tariq Carter from Dothan, Alabama.
Hi there, Tariq. How you doing, doll? Welcome to the show, and of course, you know I am looking in for your input tonight. This is part three of our Fighting the Power to Restore Your Power segment. Today we're speaking about accountability and exactly which things are accountable to which person. There are things from the outsiders, and there are things that we have to look at for ourselves. So starting with us, what do you feel are things that are going on out there that we are accountable for, and what do you think those things are?
Well, we're continuing on from what things that we said yesterday as far as accountability. You know, it says that, you know, that love, you know, how it cover multiple, you know, a multitude of sins. So first of all, we got to love ourselves. Second of all, we got to do for ourselves. And at the same time, we got to be ourselves. See, we've been patterned behind, you know, we've been more or less shaped and molded behind other people. So it's been like a state of hypnotism to us, you know, and we have to break that mold from the things that happen to us, but we have to teach these things to those who are ignorant to it, because it is people that's ignorant to it, and we have to teach the children. You know, and in order for it to change, the new paradigm must come through the kids coming up and, you know, the teenagers. And with time, things will change, you know, because the grown people basically, you know, if they're not open-minded person, they're going to be stuck with the way that they do things. So the only thing we can do as far as our accountability is teach to our future. And then teach them that we must love one another, you know, and it must be a concerted effort as a whole, you know, because you can't just teach one and then you have 20 that don't know a damn thing. So we have to teach the children. This is who it's all about. People live for the future, and the future are your children. So if you don't realize that your legacy and your existence itself as a people, from person to person, it starts from the child. So, you know, after the child grows up, then they have more children, and then the cycle keeps going on. But if you're not putting life into those children, then the only thing you're instilling is the opposite, is death. So therefore we have death as far as economically, as far as our relationships. And when you look at, like how you say, certain things, you know, not to be holier than thou, but just from a spiritual standpoint, that's universal about death and how it can permeate our lives if we're not spiritually correct. So that means that you have to have integrity, you have to have morals, and you have to strive within those things to be better people, because improving helps the lives of anything. Whenever you improve on something, just like when you improve on a house and you put stuff through it, the value increases. So the more we learn in loving ourselves and teaching ourselves those things that help us to grow, you know, and to become a better people, then our value will increase. And people will respect us more because they see us respecting ourselves. That's why it's these shows going on, like what you were saying, when it's Love and Hip Hop and all these other different things, because the media, they have their own. They've always projected bad things about us. It's nothing new. And then in turn, when it's certain things going on, because we are really a subculture of like the scraps of what they've given us. And we've internalized that, and the byproduct is the things that we see today, which is not right, you know, but everything they do is all right, not even when it's not right, because this is how it's been. So we have to still be those people, as our parents told us, well, you know that you have to do things 100 times better than them, and it's, that's what we really have to do. But we have to do it in a setting that benefits us, and stop doing it in a setting that's benefiting the same people who helped to put us there long ago. If we're not building for ourselves, then we're building for someone else. That's how it is. they show us all the time through different things that happen with us that it's about their self-preservation. They taught us this in school, and they let you know just in a few words that self-preservation is the first, not the second or the third, the first law of not things that's not natural, but of nature. What they say that it's natural. So if we're not taking care of ourselves, how can we try to be reaching out for somebody else to take care of us? I seen something today that Eddie, the comedian, the guy.
Eddie Griffin.
Yeah, and he said that, and it made so much sense when I read it today. When white people get fed up with stuff and want things to change, he said, man, they start blowing up stuff. He said, with us, we take it to the streets and start singing. And I fell out when he said that. You know, I said, and that, because it's the truth. When they want things to get done, when you look at their history, they make moves by any means that they have to make it, period. You know, and I say because we are under that, it's certain things that I wouldn't advise. But the main thing I can advise to do is get ourselves together, if nothing else. Because then if you're getting yourself together in this modern day and age, unless they just shut us off to the world like how they did, and that'll be hard, like how they did back with Oklahoma, and a lot of people didn't even know about it for years and years, that it'll be very hard to just deny us if we really start sticking together and building with one another. It'll be very hard to hide doing us outright wrong. You know, and it happens certain other ways, you know, and we don't stick together enough and put it out there. We have to get more outlets like what you have. We have to get more outlets like these different things on TV so we can have something to be able to put out there the truth of what's really going on. We have to stop being conquered because the people who conquered us, the ones who conquer you, they give you the history they want you to have. They don't give you the truth. When the enemy defeats you, they didn't defeat you to tell the truth. They defeated you to tell the truth the way that they wanted it to be known as or seen as.
Absolutely, Alchemy. And I just want to let you know that I have upgraded you to the AK-47. You are no longer the small gun box. You have been on fire. And I'm telling you that I see it. You are absolutely right. You are absolutely right. We are standing in the back. Now, understand, you alluded to something earlier. Panelists, I see you there. Just give me a couple of seconds. You alluded to something in your statement earlier where you said not to be holier than thou, but, you know, if people aren't spiritually right. Now, no secret, I'm a Christian. I believe there's one God. I believe in Jesus Christ. So that's my belief. That's my faith. But let's take out the Christianity side of it for one second, and this is what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
We have lost any type of moral fiber to almost everything, and we have sold ourselves out even more so with people who are presenting us the opportunity to be a part of stuff that has been blatantly stripped of moral fiber.
Mm.
Okay? I'm going to say this. Every society, human being, every company, everything needs to have some sort of right and wrong teachings somewhere down the line. There has to be limits drawn somewhere. Limits are drawn by either legal or moral. These are the things that you need to have in order for something to be considered balanced or to have a round table, well-balanced arsenal to choose from. Now, there's absolutely no limits or blockages or, let me say, no stoppers. That's the word that used to be used with me when I was younger. There's no stoppers with the way people are doing things now because nobody believes in anything that tells you, whoa, you can't do that. That's a little too much. Hey, no. You can do that, but not at the expense of this. So nobody has any type of spiritual or moral guidance anymore, whether it is Christian God or Buddhism or whatever it is. Every culture has something that they find sacred. We have lost that. And as an African-American people, if we're losing the last thing that kept us going through the worst of everything, through the rapes of our women and children, through the killings of our children and our black men, through the cutting off of our ancestors' foot, to the enslavement of our rights as people. If we're losing the one thing that kept us going, actually, I'm going to say one of two things. The love of God and the love of our family. And I'll tell you that. Because it was the spirituals and their prayers and their beliefs in what God can do that kept them going through all the shootings, through all the epithets, through all of the degradation and the dehumanizing. They stood their ground to the point where they had changes made for us. The second thing was that in their mind, in addition to their faith in God, they said, I believe that God's going to help me get this done because I refuse to let my children grow up in the world staying the way it is now.
That's right.
We have lost both of those things in today's society as a people, both of them, because we sold out to the very people who brought us to the point that we're at. And understand, our ancestors lacking the educational knowledge that they afforded us to have that we waste, lacking the resources and the options and the choices that they allowed us that we waste, they still fought. They
yep.
still said, I'm going to go out there and fight this. You can say, blow off my hand, you could chop off my foot, but you're still going to hear my mouth about it.
Mm-hmm.
People were hosed with high-pressure cold water. People were bombed in churches. And by no means am I saying that, you know, we would welcome that. And nobody would choose that. I'm sure our ancestors did it. But we're dealing with a cowardly people that they seem powerful, but they have to come after one of us in groups.
Mm-hmm.
They're so scared to allow us to have our one little piece because they know what we're capable of, and we refuse to connect with it ourselves.
Yep.
So what they'll do is the minute we start to have a good business idea and it starts to look like it's making a little something, they'll burn it down.
Or
so
taking it
if, we're
for
going
that
to start, if we're going to start something, no, we already are ahead of the game because we know that that's what they'll do. If they don't do it physically and outright like thugs, they're going to do it through something corporal because you know what? Pretty much that's the extent of their crime. If they don't shoot you outright, they're going to go steal through the computer.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to wreck your ID. They're going to do something in cyberspace that'll screw you up somehow.
Mm.
Now, one other thing before I bring our other two panelists in that I saw. Here's another example of how who they are, what they do, or what their nature is that we need to be aware of. There's a man that was called named, let me get his name correctly, Barnaby Jack. He was a security researcher in San Francisco. And I believe... Let me see how recent this article is. Yeah. He passed away last year, just days before he was going to reveal, wait for it, how you can use the computer to hack into a system and remotely kill random pacemaker patients. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for that. What kind of a sick individual would go after something like that to try to discover? How you can sit back and use a computer to wirelessly send a death signal to a heart patient's pacemaker? Now, funny thing is, with that being something that it will come to light, imagine those of our oppressors that really want to get rid of us, that up until this point, you couldn't get a poor black person without insurance to be approved for a pacemaker. But would you want to bet that if they had found that out, how quickly we would be accepted at a higher rate to get these things, whether we had insurance or not? How quickly they would offer this type of equipment to be accepted through Medicaid at no cost to you? And just how quickly we would subsequently find that there's a higher risk in black people dying that wear pacemakers.
Ain't that so much?
But this guy was celebrated. He was there was a whole big thing. Now you could have all the other little savages in the mix coming out trying to find out his lost research notes so they can continue his work if they didn't kill him off in the first place when he was headed to go expose the thing. Let's bring in our panelists for the evening. Hang on.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the show, Paula. You're on the air.
Yes, this is Carlos Ellaby Jones or J-Lo Jenkins, caller from D.C.
Hey, J-Lo, hang on just a second. Got two more behind you. One moment, please. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and peace unto you, the present panel members this evening. Peace unto you, my brothers.
Likewise
speaking. And one second. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Am I late? This is Joe.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Hey,
how are you guys doing?
There's two people before you, so you'll be up in just a minute.
No problem.
J-Lo, your take on tonight's issue.
I just want to start and say, the continuation of this topic was so important. It is so important. I'm so glad that we're still talking about ways to strengthen our people. And that's basically what we're talking about, how we need to strengthen our people. And thank you, Katie, But I was just thinking about the ways in which if we start taking a more serious perspective or stance on what will truly strengthen our people, even if people did it on a small level, it would magnify, First, the spousal support, The male-female relationship, taking the mate relationship dynamic more serious is the first thing we need to take care of, with the whole, the fact that a lot of people aren't wed means nothing if we take the relationship and the mate dynamic more seriously than they showing us on television and this and that.
Yeah.
It is shameful, It's as a black, on an international level, as a black man, of the kingdom of the world, it's shameful for you not to take an interest in your child. It's very shameful. And they can't confuse you otherwise. Do not let the television showing, my baby daddy, all this. These are the untrue things, but we need to take it more seriously. Whether you're wed or not, to men, for real, we need to keep our kids with us. Keep them with us. Take time out. Time is the thing we need right now because we need to fortify the children for the next level. We have to stop helping the white man or, the man or whatever you want to, instead of using the word white, it's not even racial. We know what we're talking about. Instead of helping the man kill our leaders through all this pettiness and through, encouraging, petty old disputes and the crappy ways that we show disagreement on television, they killed so many leaders that way. They started, they had Marcus Garvey not getting along with W.E.B. Du Bois, and they had Martin Luther King supposedly not getting along with Malcolm X and this, that, and other, and all these double reverse psychologies making us think our leaders are fighting not for the same cause. And the children aren't understanding it because we encouraging it. We need to grow beyond the pettiness, beyond the I'm against you, you against me thing. And you were talking about that earlier. We tear each other down so fast, And the thing is, it is haphazard out here. Everybody's doing everything because we need to have some restrictive laws for ourselves, no matter who, like you said, no matter what faith you are a part of. Have some restrictive laws for yourself. Teach the children to have healthy restrictive laws also, okay? And they need to see you doing the same thing, whatever that is. Have some restrictive laws, regardless of the written law, and take it into account, because we really need to know and interpret the law, all the laws that applies to us. If we interpret, sit down. And if we really sit down and interpret every single law written that applies to us, whether it be business, whether it be criminal, whether it be civil, whether it be occupational, we will instantly feel and become more secure in ourselves. A lot of fear will be off of us because they've used the law and ignorance of the law to destroy us, and they still do it.
And Jay, let me just stop you there for a second. Again, with everything that you alluded to, okay, everything that I've spoken about how the reality shows depict us, who do you hold accountable for that happening? Who do you hold accountable? I don't blame the media. Listen, let's take out the race part of the media for a minute. Media people are after the hot scoop. They have to make their mark in the television world, in the literal world. They have to do that. They're going to go out there and try to be the first person on the scene to get the story first. Okay, I get that. Now let's talk about, like I said, going back to these stupid shows, going back to the Justin Bieber situation. Who do you hold accountable for that to continue? Is it them or is it us? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. But I was saying, I hold accountable two great forces. One being us, being the fact that we submit to it, the other being, and I want to just point out that the other force hasn't just started going on. You know, even before they started using television and everything for the media, they use other things. They use people. They use rumors. They use things like this and things like that. You know, when I was doing some research, right, on times like the times of Marcus Garvey and stuff, I was finding out that most of the reason that, you know, they had disputes that people knew of was because somebody published that W.E.B. Du Bois called Marcus Garvey fat and black and something else, for word, and that W.E.B. Du Bois said that, or that Marcus Garvey said that W.E.B. Du Bois is mixed with white people and da-da-da-da-da. That is not something that came from either of their two mouths, more than likely. Now, you see, so we have to change our frame of thought. Our frame of thought can't keep, you know, we can't look at the media for face value anymore whatsoever or teach our children, because what we did was we keep starting over. The children keep, you know, they wake up eventually, but what if the children start out awake? This is crap, you know, and if they start out awake, you know, so it's on us, you know, but it's on us to recognize and acknowledge 100% all the time what is truly going on and try to recognize the truth and only, because I was watching on the news today. Today I was watching on the news, and I wanted to pass out this morning because I saw on the news where they were talking about all these vaccines and stuff, right, that they was going to ship out to Africa. It was on the news in the morning. And across the screen in big, bold letters, it said bacterial infection with an exclamation point, as if it was a bacterial infection outbreak or what have you. And they said that they are fighting this with vaccines. And I thought to myself, being that I know a little bit about vaccines, vaccines deal with viruses, not even bacteria. So why are you dealing with that? What did you see? Why was that on the screen this morning? That was totally double reverse. It didn't even make sense. Bacterial infection outbreak, yet you throw vaccines at people. That don't make sense. That doesn't make sense, because bacterial infections are done with antibiotics and stuff like that, you know, whatever, or just sanitation or whatever. Maybe you need to go in, and maybe you need to make the conditions better wherever you're dropping all of this experimental medicine. That's basically what it is, you know. They even experiment on us over here, you know. On a global level, it's shameful for us not to acknowledge what's going on and allow a child to figure it out on his own.
Absolutely. Frankly, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to move on to the next panelist. Okay? If you have a string of robberies in your neighborhood and you were attacked by, I should say your house was vandalized by one of these robbers, and you continue to walk out your house and leave your door unlocked, who's to blame if you get robbed again?
I'm included. I'm a co-conspirator. The first time I wasn't.
Like I said, if you are in a neighborhood where there was a string of robberies and you decided after getting hit once not to leave out your door and lock it up, which is usually the way normal people would do it, okay, Normally, people, once that happens, they're super paranoid that it could happen again, forgetting the fact that other dangers exist, but that's the one thing they would focus on. They would make sure that the house was locked, every window was locked, every possible back door entrance was locked. If you walk out your door feeling that it was a one-time incident, and you don't lock your door, who's to blame for you getting robbed a second time?
Oh, you are definitely guilty as well. You know, you're guilty. Yeah, you. You are.
You're accountable.
Right, of course. But the thing is, it's funny, you became a co-conspirator in the crime that made you the victim, you see? So then you victimize yourself. See, now, this is a person, right, a person that responded to being robbed. They responded to being robbed first time, and they, let's just say hypothetically this person was like, man, they robbed me, I ain't locking my doors, they coming, they coming, whatever, it not happened, I survived, they angry, and they, I guess, lashing back by doing the total reverse of what they should do. So this might be this might actually happen. Okay, this might actually happen. And this person is victimized. And they have become a co-conspirator in the crimes against themselves.
Bingo. Is that not what we've been talking about for, I don't know, a year straight now? Is that not one of our main problems at this moment? Is that not one of the things that, despite everything we know, is already in place that's not going to change, that it's not up to them to change their nature? It's up to us not to accept it anymore? That's not the question. I need to move on to the next panelist and let everybody get their shot in. Deacon.
Yes.
Your take on the situation.
Well, my take on the situation with the problem with a lot of our people is they've lost the sense of moral fiber in their lives, and it seems like everybody's going around here and living on this cliche of, oh, well, it is what it is, so I'm going to get mine, so if you don't get yours, you're just going to be left out there. And that's not the way to approach things the way they are in today's society. If anything, we need to be unifying each other, educating each other, because there's always someone in our group that doesn't know something about something, but you know something about something to teach them. And then the something that they know about that you might not be familiar with needs to be taught to you. And that's not happening. You know, you can go into a Jewish community and everybody is working together to help each other in any way that they can, and that's the way it should be with our group of people. Because how can you prosper in life and have people surrounding you that are not prospering, and you not educating them in order for them to prosper also? It just doesn't work. And a lot of these so-called young parents that are coming up now, refusing to discipline their children. They think it's cute when the little ones are really little and they cuss and they saying whatever they want to say, and then when they get older, you want to try and discipline them. It's too damn late now. It's too late. Their mouth is outrageous, and the way they treat other people is outrageous, and that's on the parent, because instead of them trying to be a parent, they're trying to be their friends, and that's way off base. You know, and we as a people, we are born natural leaders, and we've fallen away from that. You know, and I'm not even talking spiritually, just straight out being a person. You know, you lost touch. Everybody's talking about me, me, me. Let's do away with the me, and let's work on us.
Absolutely. I'm going to come back to that with the second half of what we're speaking on. Joe, your turn. Joe?
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I was listening on speaker. All right. Accountability, yeah, everybody should be accountable for their own actions. And I disagree with the caller about being a co-conspirator in case you left your door open. If it's the first time, and if you're in a peaceful neighborhood the first time, then you're not really expecting... Somebody got a call?
Yeah, they need to take care of that. Come on now, you know you're on a broadcast station, and you need to do away with the background noise.
So, I don't agree with that. I don't think that. For example, if I'm absent-minded and people leave their cars out in the street, and I leave my doors open. Now, if the car gets robbed, it's a mistake that I have to admit to. But that doesn't give the burglar, the carjacker, the guy that's robbing the car, any kind of excuse or laxity because he robbed the car. He still did something
right.
That was wrong. So
right.
I wouldn't say a co-conspirator. I would say a co-conspirator if the person knows that the house is going to be robbed, or if the probability is that the house is going to be robbed and you know it, and you leave the keys underneath the doormat and you leave the door open, then you're a co-conspirator. It's like when I've said a girl is in a toxic relationship with a guy, right? And she whines all the time about how he beats. But she gets into her car. She's halfway. She's 45 minutes away from him. But she gets into her car every weekend to go over to see him to get beat. Now, that's not a victim. That's a partner. Okay?
Yeah.
Because she knows what's going to happen. All right? Now, in terms of accountability for black people, I think that everybody is always talking about how people should, you know, look out for each other, which is kind of noble. But I'm also going to disagree with the caller that said in the Jewish community they look out for one another. If it's a Jewish community which is religiously oriented and you see the people with the sideburns, yeah, to a great degree. But in a normal Jewish community, people look out for themselves individually. That's what made the Jewish people strong. That's what made the Chinese immigrants that came over here strong. They did not look for a Messiah. They did not look for other means outside of themselves. They imparted onto their kids, you're going to school and you're getting good marks. And you're not going outside until I see your homework done and it's done right. And everybody had that same theme throughout the whole neighborhood, throughout the whole community, Jewish and Asian, but they didn't look for other people.
Absolutely. On that one, can't argue that one there at all. That is absolutely true. And the Orthodox Jews absolutely do shop and distribute and buy and support Orthodox Jews. That's for sure. Now, the ones that are not Orthodox, yes, they look out for themselves. But I will tell you this, they look for as much free labor with minorities as possible. They will take them all in the group. They don't care if there's not enough positions to give the people that's out there. They will find ways to chip and scrape a penny. They will cram four or five positions on one person and hold them accountable for all of them, knowing that they're supposed to have separate people for each of these positions to make the team work. So with that being said, you're absolutely right about the other cultural method of operation. They don't go looking outside for other people to help them or to actually approve of them.
Mm-hmm.
They go out there and they study what the target is, because I'll tell you this. They'll say, you know what? We need to go open up a store in, say, Woodside, Queens, New York, because there's a lot of Spanish people there and all they want to do is buy, say, hats. And they open up a hat shop. And they'll employ their own kind to sell to us out there or sell to the non-cultures of them, and they'll keep it inside. Then they'll go to Chinatown and buy their own stuff from their Chinatown, bring it back to sell it to us at what they think appeals to us, which is usually a discount price or something free, which they don't really do that much. But you're right, they do. Then they'll stock up and they'll take our money and send it back to their country and change it into their currency and make them rich where they are. My problem is when they take out, my problem is with us is this. You come into our neighborhood. You open up a store that's open 24 hours. And this is something I use all the time in my segment, this particular example. You are advertising yourself as a 24-hour deli, supermarket, 24-hour pharmacy, whatever it is. okay? But if it's a grocery store in particular, you're in my neighborhood. You don't speak English. You come from another whatever. We service you daily, religiously, all the time, reliably. You're a 24-hour store. We need to come and get something. I guess we don't know what we're in the mood for. It's 12 midnight now. You've closed your doors to our community to be able to go in and literally intimately pick from the shelf what it is you want. You have to stand in the cold, the rain, the heat, the snow, it doesn't matter, looking through a 2x4 window made of, I don't know, 4-inch thick Teflon glass to pick past the guy who's asking you what you want, to try to figure out how to pick something up from shelves you can't possibly see from a window because you're not allowed to walk inside the store and shop like a human being. My problem with us is we accept that and we continue to shop there.
Well, there you go. Now, I don't know about those kind of restrictions. I do know that I remember going
into... No, you wouldn't, sir. It's in our neighborhood.
Yeah, I was about to say, I remember going into a neighborhood and we had Chinese restaurants and they had the plexiglass up because black people were going in there and making fun of them and being very disruptive. But the thing is...
Oh, we're not the only ones. I'll tell you that.
I know. Okay.
We're definitely not the only ones.
No, of course not.
And I'll say this. With all the fuss and fighting that we do, or all of the teasing that we may do, we still are their biggest, most reliable customers. And you know what? We could have been there without doing any of that for 17 years. And if we ever were short a penny or a dime on that one day after this, the 17th year of patronism, I'll tell you this, they'll say we can't get away with it.
If they got in and they have customers coming there, it's still their store, they can do whatever they want with the store. Now, if people don't like them, don't go to the store. Plus, nobody's got a gun to anybody's head to shop there. Plus, people within the community can get money and open up their own store. I can tell you right now, anybody can open up a store as long as they have good credit. They don't even need a college education. Just have good credit. You can get money from a bank, maybe not the first bank, second bank, third bank, but you can get money from a bank, open up a store, and compete.
And just how easily you just said that is exactly the way it would go for you. And that's the whole thing. Now, here's where the reality comes in for us. Okay?
No, KD.
I will tell you.
I will tell you also. I did this on another show, and I said to the black people there, I said, why don't you do this experiment? I said, why don't you go to a bank, find out if you can get some money, and come back and see what happens. So the host of the show did that, came back and told me he went to 5 banks. His own bank wouldn't give him a loan, but he went to a bank that said the bank would grant him a loan so that he could use it for entrepreneurial purposes. Black people. Okay.
I would love to know what the name of that bank is.
Well, since they've had the law, community reinvestment laws and other laws since then, and they've had senators, that you're from New York. Schumer is from New York. He had on his website, doesn't have it anymore, how he went into the communities and banks, and he said he practically forced them to give loans to black people who were subprime loans. One of the reasons why the subprime crisis happened back in 2008. These banks were giving out money to everybody, not just blacks, but a lot of people who weren't credit worthy. And look what happened. But that's another thing. Those are mortgages. But you can get a loan, open up a store, and see what you can do. It can be done. And you're in New York, so I guess it can be done there. This guy, where did he live? He was the host of the show. I forget. I don't know if it was California or where. I think it was Ohio. But in any case, it doesn't happen the first time around. You got to go shopping. It's against the law to not grant loans to people unless they have really, really bad credit. And then even after that, I believe it's possible for somebody to try to appeal that kind of decision. I don't know if it's as easy now as it was back in 2008, 2009, but... When I talked to this guy, it was last year. It was 2013. I think it was 2013, maybe 2012. And he did it. That's what he said. And well, there are guys.
Well, I don't know what part of Ohio, but I know it wouldn't have been in Toledo. That's for sure.
There's a guy on the show. I don't know if he still has a show.
I will say this. There are exceptions to every rule, and I will say that. But the rule on the whole for African-Americans is you don't get to do that. Now, first of all, as far as credit worthy goes, there's a couple of things with that. Credit, definitely, there are. That's a personal responsibility. But then let's talk about the people who got involved and were married and things were going okay. And once you're married, you're 50% on the hook for whatever took place in that. And if you got involved with somebody who you didn't know was doing something behind
well,
your back.
Well, then the breaks, and that happens to white people, too.
Oh, yeah, I will say that. What I'm saying is, okay, but believe it or not, Joe,
I'll tell you what, here's a believe it or not. There's a guy on BTR. We know what his job is, to find businesses for black people. He said he's done over 4,000, I think it's over, helped 4,000 people. Forget the name of the show. Let me see if I can find it while I'm on the line, because I get into these discussions all the time. Let me see. Let's see if I have it here or not. Yeah, done over 4,000 startups. The name of the show is Cruise and Hughes. This is from 2 years ago. Cruise, like Tom Cruise, and Hughes. That's his job. He's a black
Hughes
business consultant.
Okay. Very good on that one. If he's doing that, that's a great thing, which means he's one of the exceptions to the rule. Like I said, everybody's head doesn't fit every hat. But on the average and on the majority, I'm going to give you a perfect example. There's a whole bunch of pop-up ads by Google on some sites if you're just surfing Google.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're on Facebook where, you know, whoever takes the ads on Facebook pops up in the corner while you're surfing and doing whatever. Take a look at what they offer when they say that they're going to give, they have scholarships for single black mothers going back to school, and they have scholarships specifically for African-American women trying to start a business. Take a good look at what the maximum they offer that you could apply for. Because even when people say that you can get up to $5,500, it doesn't mean that you're going to qualify for the max. But they're saying that what the maximum that they offer is that much. Okay, now take a look at what a white male could go in and get. And I'll tell you this. We did an experiment on that. 10 different sites, 4 different banks offering the same thing. Okay? I had my cousin who is mixed but looks more like a white person than she does a black person. She has even a white type name, you know, if you want to figure out how that goes. She goes in. Bad credit, because the girl likes to party. Okay, bad credit. She goes in there. She has a particular, name behind herself that she floated around as possible backup. Okay, now the guy that she used has a company that's not any big time, you know, 5-star Fortune 500 company. But his services are predominantly white hairy. Okay, she goes in. She says that she needs $7,000 to get started. She says she wanted to open up a daycare. She wants to do whatever, okay? I go in, and I say, we're starting up business for school. We have some after-school daycare things going on. In addition to that, we have a facility that's going to deal with after-school programs and facilities for children to be able to do extra tutoring on their homework, to empower the black kids to do whatever. 10 different sites denied it. Wasn't even on credit worthiness either, just that this wasn't the type of program they were looking for. 10 different sites who specifically said they are given to people who credit doesn't matter and definitely are trying to empower the minority communities. She puts it out there. She was offered 5,000 of the 7,000 she asked for.
All right. Here's another thing. There's another show on BTR. This woman, she's on every night. She's the owner of a daycare center. Why don't you go over there and ask her how she did it? She's black.
Oh, I will.
The name of the show is All Girls Talk Radio.
All Girls Talk Radio. Okay.
Right. Okay.
So far you gave me two names. I will check it out and I'll see what the situation is. Now getting back to where we stand as people, creditworthy. Usually we are dealing with, let's say, jobs. Now let's talk about how we get into the point of financial problems without any spending situation. First of all, the government is not even giving American jobs, let alone black Americans. Okay? It's being outsourced. So our economy is going down the damn drain. They're busy meddling their nose in other people's business and feeding other people and giving jobs to them to do whatever. Meanwhile, America's in a bad crunch because of it, and we are being told that we have to cut funds or cut programs or cut whatever that help our economy flourish within itself because there's no money left. Gee, you wonder why? And of whatever jobs are opening up and are available, too many black candidates that are qualified are being sent away and not considered. Too many of these undercover exposés on videos coming out on the news to prove that. So that's not
a lot. That's what I want to see. Because in order to really see if racism exists to the degree that everybody says that it does, and I'm not one who says the white privilege doesn't exist or racism doesn't exist, but the same degree of racism to exist today as it did in yesteryear, I'd have to see the stats. Because if, for example, you go to a job and out of every 10 white applicants, they accept 7, but if 10 black applicants go, they accept 5. That is not statistically significant, okay? First off, white America does not like black America. And there's no reason for white America to like black America, like there's no reason for black America to like white America. There are certain obstacles that people have to overcome, and it's not easy for white people either. It's relatively easier, but it's not easy. The thing is that black people have to understand what the obstacles are and manage to push through them. I'm not saying get over slavery, you know, and Jim Crow was only a few years ago. But you got to do it. You know, if people want to be talking
about that point. That's what I speak about with us as it stands now. But for you to say racism is not as bad as it was in the yesteryear, they're not walking up and being able to just smack a kid because they're black and then tell the father, I dare you to say something for me smacking your kid on the floor. But you can't tell me that racism isn't out there just the same, just that now it's being done with a new face.
Nice, sir. Racism exists, but not to the same degree.
Oh, yes it is. You know what? That's exactly what the Supreme Court said when they took away the Voters' Rights Act of 1865.
Okay. All right. Look, if you want to believe it, that's fine.
But,
look, I talk to other black people.
We live it. And I will say this, that it's a sad but true reality, Joe, that white people, even the ones that are not racist or believe in equality, will never understand it.
Okay.
Because no matter how bad you guys get, no matter how bad you guys get, white America will embrace you somehow.
Okay.
You could
never
do that much wrong.
All right, fine. Look, I've talked to successful black people. They say racism does exist, but if they're making $100,000 a year, you know, then they're making $100,000 a year. There's about, I think, 2,000 black millionaires, something like that. Look, okay. Fine. All right?
This wasn't for you to digress or anything like that. Let me just bring in the other panelists here for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the show, Corey. You on the air?
How you doing, everybody? This is Patrick.
Hey, Patrick. There's somebody behind you. Let me just bring them in. Actually, two people behind you. Welcome to the show, Corey. You on the air?
Hey, this is Professor Carl Tone Jones. If I'm talking to you all this, I'm somewhere where I really, should be talking. So.
1 second. There's one person behind you. Patrick has the mic first. Hang on. Welcome to the show, Carl. You're on the air.
Yes, this is Carlos L.B. Jones again, or Stalo Jenkins. I think I got cut off.
Was some feedback coming from your end. It's quiet now. Hang on a second. Welcome to the show. Call you on the air, 917. Mm-hmm. Okay. Patrick, you're on me.
That was me.
Hello?
Yes, Patrick?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, go ahead. It's your turn.
Okay. I think one thing we have to do as black people is, as a solution, is we need to get equated with the facts. And when I'm being distracted, I'm sorry.
Hello?
Okay. We need to get equated with the facts of what's going on. When we start talking about a lot of different things, we're referencing a vantage point that's inaccurate that's been given to us. When we start talking about education, for instance, there's this common misnomer that black people don't like school or black people don't go to school or whatever the case may be. But then you find out when you take into a consideration family income and family educational backgrounds, black kids have more schooling and more credentials than white counterparts of comparable family income and educational situations. And then even in that, even though they're more credentialed and they have more years of education than their comparable white parties, when you look at unemployment rates, to a rough degree, when you look at unemployment rates, you see that black people with degrees in a lot of states have unemployment rates similar to white people with high school diplomas. Or you see black people with a high school degree having unemployment rates similar to white people who are dropouts. Or you see black people who don't have a criminal history at all, in some cases having unemployment rates similar to white people with a criminal history. And even in that, when you start talking about getting money, I heard you guys having this discussion. Sure, it is possible for a black person to get a loan and start a business. But when you look at the SBA, less than 5% of the loans they gave out in 2008 were to black people. Matter of fact, the number is like, I think it was like 2.5% or something like that.
34% of the SBA gave out loans to minorities. 34%.
No, we're not talking about minorities. We're talking about black people.
See,
when you start talking about minorities, you're also including white women into that mix. And I've known plenty of white male business owners that have gotten their wives to open a business just so that they could take advantage of the minority benefits because white women are labeled as minorities.
You know, that's a ripoff. That's a ripoff.
It is, but it happens. Mm. So the premise is true. Black people can go and do these things, but it's not as simple as just going and doing them. In a lot of cases, you're facing a lot more rejection. You're facing different consequences. There have been plenty of reports that show that black people need a higher credit rating to get loans than their white counterparts. So there are plenty of different things to prove, even to the point of those that would say, yes, it has gotten better in a sense of white people can't shoot you in the streets and they don't line up to lynch you or anything like that. But there were black millionaires in the early 1900s. There were black millionaires. There have always been some black people that were above the system. There have always been some black people that managed to wiggle through the cracks. So when we have these conversations, I think it's important not to get caught up and the anecdotal one-on-one stories are the personal tales. You have to look at the total picture of what's going on for the majority, because the outliers will fool you. If we were to look at the outliers alone, we would see somebody could say, well, Michael Jordan made $200 million last year, so what are y'all complaining about? And if all we're looking at is outliers, then that makes all of our comments about economic disenfranchisement moot. Like, it's a moot point. It doesn't matter. But so we have to be real about where we are. And to that point, it becomes imperative for us to understand, look, if you're going into white culture to ask for something, then you can't get mad at the criteria that they set up. Like, that's what it all boils down to. You know, until we develop our own, we can't go into white cultural society and then say, we don't like the way y'all do business, now I'm mad and I'm going to throw a temper tantrum. No, you have to deal with the world that you walked into, and you have to deal with the rules of engagement in the world that you walked into. If black people want more, we have to do more for ourselves. I mean, like the professor was saying yesterday, racism is big business. I mean, Donald Sterling just made $2 billion. If I could do that, I would go outside right now and start yelling out racial slurs. If I could make $2 billion off it, you know.
Yeah, I doubt if that was his intention when Stiviano released the tapes. But, yeah, okay, he had a slew of lawyers which helped him to do that as a consequence. I don't think that's
okay,
what it is.
Okay, well, then how did Riley Cooper wind up making $25 million?
Who?
Riley Cooper.
Who's he?
Okay, football player, white football player who came out there, got drunk, stood outside of a Kenny Chesney concert and started screaming in his drunken rage at a bunch of people behind the gate of the concert site. I'll come back there and kick all you nigga asses.
George Zimmerman got a couple hundred thousand donated to him. You know,
you don't want to be him.
Clive and Bundy, no, you're right about that, I don't. But Clive and Bundy, you know, had a black bodyguard. A black, this man had a black bodyguard, like he was like some important whatever. Like, you know, like if somebody killed him, it would be assassination instead of murder. No, you're not that important to get the assassination label. You don't get a bodyguard. But, you know, that's what he has. But, you know, when, like I just said, I think it's important that when we talk about these things, we have to keep it on a level of looking at the entire system, because you can paint any kind of picture you want if you just look at outliers and anecdotal evidence.
For everybody here on the line to be successful.
Of course it is.
It's impossible for everybody on the line.
No. It's not impossible for everybody on the line to be successful. It's not impossible, but that's not the discussion we're having now is, does everyone on the line have the same fair and equitable opportunity to be successful?
Right. Like I said, you got to try harder. Like you said, if you're going to engage with white people, and you have to know their rules of engagement. It is a horrible thing that, blacks are on the bottom of the totem pole.
It's only racism.
Oh, for God's sake. Yeah, no kidding. So if you're going to keep talking about it, then you're going to keep talking about it years from now. Instead of doing something about it, 4 years from now, everybody should have a reunion to talk about how you got nowhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, Joe, because that's exactly what I'm trying to tell my listeners, my people. This is exactly what it is that you need to hear. This is a white person telling you exactly what I have been. Do you need a bigger wake-up call?
Which is...
Well, you need a bigger wake-up call. This is exactly the mentality that we're dealing with. And, Joe, thank you, because you just sat there and said life isn't as bad as it was back in the day. This is exactly what we face as modern-day racism. This is a watered-down version of open lynching. And I'm not blaming you for what we fail to do for ourselves. because we continue to go out there and buy your damn ticket. We continue to do that. But I will say, you cannot sit there and say that everybody here can be successful because you can just go up to a bank and get a loan. There's two BTROs that's offering that now to black people. Yes, did you ever stop to think that maybe those two people have a, let's say, race quota they have to make so that they can look like they're operating under an Equal Opportunity Act?
Yeah, so like the caller said, start your own businesses and
absolutely,
move on from
that's
there.
Absolutely, that's what we're doing now. But I'm glad you said it, because now any of my listeners out there that says it is what it is, what are we going to do about it, or that's not true, the white man got our back. Thank you very much.
The white man, you mean, got your back, isn't supporting? No, freaking white people don't like black people.
And thank you again. We have said it loud and clear from a man that has a little intelligence from that side of the world.
Well, I want to, I lost my train of thought, and I want to hear what the professor has to say, so I'm going to defer to silence.
Yeah, professor, are you there?
What I'll say?
Professor?
Yeah, I'm here. My phone is dying. I'm currently in the hospital with my brother right now, so I'm trying to talk as low as possible. He's okay, but, you know, still in the procedure. So,
sorry about that.
No, that's fine, that's fine. But listening to the show, and I'm not necessarily surprised by, I'm not necessarily surprised by the stuff that I'm hearing, but at the same time, just give me a second, I'll be out. At the same time, this is why I tell people that we can't depend on system of white supremacy, because people who live in that system, even people who don't recognize themselves as nationals, are white nationals. And you can tell by the type of things they talk about and the way they talk about race relations and so forth. The whole idea that somebody would have to work twice as hard or better is an imperialistic thought mindset in itself. So to, you know, talk to people and tell them that they need to buckle up, or they buck up and work harder, well, that's just nonsense, because even when you work harder, there's redlining involved. There's redlining involved. There's all sorts of different tactics involved to maintain that system. So, you know,
you know who's the biggest obstacle
to
you?
I already know.
It's the black politicians. Because you've got the black caucus, you've got black congressmen, you've got black senators.
Who do they work for?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If they were for you, they wouldn't be working for white people.
But the bottom line is, and we all know that there are Boule Cash Society people out there who do the business of other people, and they can look like us. So the bottom line is, what you're saying is, it's a lot of jargon, and you're talking about people complaining. I need to get up, buddy. You're talking about people complaining and so forth, but the bottom line is, it's legitimate because we don't have the systems in place. We don't have the systems in place, and that's what we need. We need to have the systems in place, so we need to have our own resources, our own books, our own banking institutions, so that we can have our own businesses, school districts, and so forth. But unfortunately, there's a lot of red tape in that, because every time a person does that, they're villainized. Some sort of discretion comes up. I mean, you can look at Marcus Garvey, Elijah Muhammad. Every time there was a great leader who came up with an idea or a plan for nationhood, for the black community, they've always had some type of downfall. And so there's profitability in the black community maintaining itself as the lower economic strata, lower social compartments and so forth. So, I hear what Joe's saying, but it's a lot of BS, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine.
Well, it is because, you know what, as I think, you will never, no matter how bad something happens in the white culture, somewhere down the line, there's a system in place to cover them. They're celebrated when they do bad things. They're excused when they get drunk and kill a person. They're excused when they act outrageous and immoral. But if it was us, it's never ending. Michael Vick was a third party to dogfighting. He hasn't lived it down yet. And yet we have people like Riley Cooper, who said, who was told, a man who raped his own son and daughter as infants, that was told he couldn't serve his sentence because he wouldn't be able to bear the hardships of jail. When the whole idea about you committing a crime to go to jail is to endure the damn hardship.
Well, you know what, Katie? I want to just say two things real quick. One, the statement that we're whining, that's a poor choice of words, because we aren't whining, we're discussing. And you have to discuss in order to gain a clear understanding of what's going on so you can fix it. We aren't whining. And the difference is Katie is constantly asking for solutions, and we're constantly talking about what we can do to get better. Right. When you whine, all you do is talk about the problem.
Hmm. I don't think I said it. All right. But I think you're referring to me, but I don't think
I am, because you said stop whining. So I wanted to clarify that. And two, there have been plenty of examples of us trying to do these things and being railroaded. And we're not talking about on the individual level. We're talking about cities being destroyed. You know, you want to talk about
Tulsa, Oklahoma. I don't want to hear about Rosa.
You want to talk about Wilmington.
And I don't want to hear about Philadelphia.
You want to talk about Rosewood. You want to talk about Philadelphia with the moon.
No, I don't.
You want to talk about it. No, but look, the point is that I can name countless cities at different eras where black people tried to get together. And
right.
No! Stop interrupting! Now we're having a dialogue.
Yeah, but I didn't.
You've
even
been
get
allowed
5 minutes
to voice your opinion. You've been allowed to step over everybody on the call. Now let me finish my point.
If I
and then
five
we can
minutes.
Go.
No, but Katie, can I get
no,
5 minutes?
No! Hold on, because
I mean,
first off, you already have us off subject, because we shouldn't even have to be explaining our history to you.
Okay.
We're doing you a service by letting you know
mm-hmm.
what it's like and how we feel. We're trying
know.
To educate you, but you're too busy talking to listen to the education that we're trying to give you. Like I was saying, you want to talk about all these different cities. You want to talk about the great leaders we've had that have been taken away from us. You want to talk about the great leaders we have currently that are developing plans that are always being undermined. So it's not as simple as just saying, go do these things. You have to look into what's really going on in the matter. You can look at the economics professor currently right now at Duke that's been proposing all these different plans and trying to get people to unite, and this man is constantly being discredited and attacked by his white counterparts, and he doesn't even like to use the term white supremacy. He doesn't even like to focus on white people. His focus is purely on what black people can do for themselves, and he is still attacked and ridiculed and all these other things. So, like I said, it's not as simple for us. Now, do we need to do our own thing? Of course we do, no doubt. And you being on the call to the 25,000 people listening should be a wake-up call to all of them. Look, we've been saying it. A white man just came on and said it. White people don't like you. Now, but, you
exactly.
know, so let's move forward in that. So what can we do? We need to get educated on the truth of our situation. We need to stop falling for this colorblind society BS. We need to stop falling for this multicultural BS. We need to stop falling for this all you got to do is work hard BS, because nobody works harder. We need to stop falling for this we need more black businesses BS, because black people start businesses at 3 times the national average. We need to stop falling for all of the BS and realize that the truth is we cannot sustain 2 communities at once. We cannot sustain the white community and the black community at the same time. And if you have to pick which household you're going to feed, then you need to pick your own. And that's where we are in America. We need to choose to feed black people versus continuing to feed white people and praying that if I work hard enough and I show master that I ain't like the rest of them, he'll give me a piece of scrap off his table with more meat on it than bone.
Showing the superiority of the house metaphor, because this is a house that must be built, and it's a house that's being built, and it's a misconception that we're not doing it. We're doing it right now, but we're ensuring, assuring that it will continue. See, many of us are doing it right now, and the thing is, if the children are left to the mainstream media and left to all of the onslaughts from the others, they won't do it because that's not what they're being encouraged to do. We have to encourage them to do it, which is what we're doing now. So we are doing it. You know, that is a common misconception, very much so. And if it were true, it would be shameful. So, you know, I'm almost, you know, perplexed by it.
Absolutely awesome. Definitely all of you guys as usual. We're down to 7 minutes, but I do want to say this. The bottom line, our people, is this. We do have to get to the point of establishing our own so that we don't need to go outside of our own community to ask for our community help. I will say that up to the day that my breath stops coming through. And it's what we need to do. We need to stop having to need their concert tickets, their gear, their sneakers. We need to stop having to try to live like the Joneses past 3 months of our electric bills so that we can live like them for one day. I believe Erica said that quite well yesterday. Okay, we need to understand that we have what we have in the state that we've allowed ourselves to get in or were forced in at some point. We need to understand, while do we work with what we have now? What can we do? Well, we can choose where the hell we shop. We can choose what the hell we buy. We can choose what the hell we entertain ourselves with. We can stop clicking on our TVs to shows that they fund to give them Nielsen ratings and of revenue. We can stop having our children try to follow their lead by putting them on reality shows to get that little carried on a stick check. We can stop becoming successful black icons or businesses and then either turning our backs on our own people or overcharging our own people. We could stop listening to them say that racism isn't as bad as it used to be and that black people have affordabilities now. Mm. Yes, and can you imagine just how many people that are no longer, they've traded in their lynch ropes for now computer hacking. They've traded in their white sheets now for suits and ties and briefcase power. They say that all these things are being offered and allowed to anybody, but yet certain anybodies need to jump through higher hoops each and every time. They say there's no racism, but Trayvon Martin is dead over candy and a beverage. They say there's no racism, but Jordan Davis is dead because a man didn't like the way he looked or the music he played. So for those of you that are out there that don't walk around believing that just because we look bad, we look different to you, you don't have a problem with us. It doesn't look any less better. Because if you're not making a move with the power that you have for all equality, you're guilty of being who you are by inaction, keeping your blinders on. But for us as a black people, we can't afford no damn blinders. Take them off.
Amen.
Look in the mirror, speak it, and say, that in the mirror belongs to me.
And
what
Katie,
the hell am I going to do about it? And
one
if
thing,
your
Katie.
Reflection doesn't make a difference to you, turn around and look at that mini-me that's standing next to you trying to emulate what you do, because one day he wants to grow up to be just like you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Katie.
That's where we need to be. So until Monday night, everybody, be blessed, be a blessing. Special thanks to Mark Eastman, who not only stood out the month of a sponsorship, but just extended it. Also, I want to say thank you to Paul Stone Jones for being our next sponsor in line. I want to thank every one of you that continue to make this mission go, who stands up against people saying it. But you have heard from white people all over America, black people out there. You've heard the trolls calling us nigger and drones, and you've heard the nicer of the lesser of two devils. Who believe that we have a right to walk and breathe, and that things are not as bad for us as they used to be, meaning that we should really only be upset about the fact that back then our ancestors were being lynched in public simply because they were black. If you don't get it now, we'll never get anywhere. So until tomorrow night, Monday night, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference. God bless you all. Continue to fight and make some solutions. Make a choice that makes a difference for us. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.